Good morning. Good to be with you all. An honor and privilege to be here on the Lord's Day to study from the Holy Word and to be edified therein. It has been quite an eventful past few days. As was already mentioned, we have been blessed with some baptisms. And let's be praying for these young converts. But as was also mentioned, there were some funerals here too. Just yesterday for Annette Rogers and for Martin Broadwell. And potentially then that's somewhat of a reminder that there is a time to be born and a time to die. And we're looking here at young converts, those that have now named the name of Christ and have given their souls over to Him. There's a spiritual birth that takes place there. But that spiritual birth is all in preparation for us closing our eyes in death and being ready to meet our God. There's a time to be born, a time to die. We're going to be looking here this morning at the subject of parenting. And I've titled the study here, Stones and Serpents, The Need for Godly Parenting. But I want to preface this study here with a quotation from one by the name of Will Durant, who was a historian in a bygone generation, well known for writing volumes on world history. He said that the family is the nucleus of civilization. Now, he's also credited with pointing out how there is no civilization that is conquered from without until it has destroyed itself from within. A lot of truth to that as well. But focusing here on that statement that the family is the nucleus of civilization, I think that we can see that and agree that you're looking here at the basic unit of society, the centerpiece, if you will. And I think we all understand that in a very general truth here, that whatever direction families here in society are going to go, where they're going to turn, that is basically also the direction that the nation itself is going to go. And so we have to treat this subject with the utmost of respect and reverence, because it's important that we be building our families for God, for the Almighty, so that we can live long in this land and be prosperous and be blessed. But ultimately, that's all in view of heaven to come. We want to make sure that we're doing God's will here and now. I ask that you open your Bibles to the book of Matthew and find Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7. In Matthew 7, the Lord here is talking about the determination that is necessary on the part of an individual to uncover and discover the truth. And he says it like this here in Matthew chapter 7, verse 7. Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds. And to him who knocks, it will be opened. Or what man is there among you who, if his son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will he give him a serpent? If you then, being evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask him? Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them. For this is the law and the prophets. Now, Jesus here points out that it's basic here in our understanding. This is just tapping here into the human experience, that we know how to take care of our own. We look after our own. When he points out here there in verse 11, if you then being evil, I do not believe that he is suggesting in any way that mankind is inherently and innately corrupt, common with the teachings found in a good number of denominations is the idea that a man is very weak and wounded, morally speaking. And they talk about inheriting Adam's sin. That's referred to as the doctrine of original sin. And some have gone as far as to say that man is just so corrupt and so reprehensible in the sight of God that it's to the degree that he cannot even possibly think a good thought. And so if he's ever going to be saved, it's only because God has directly operated on that person's heart. Now, the Bible does not teach that at all. So what is Jesus getting at here when he talks about the potential for some being evil here? If you then being evil, I believe that the idea is basically this. That even when you take, say, the very worst of humanity, those that are there in the basement, the lowest of the low, say the Adolf Hitlers, the Stalins, the Saddam Husseins, and Osama bin Ladens, men who have been guilty of great atrocities, genocide, they still, when all is said and done, knew how to take care of their own flesh and blood. In fact, they would often lavish their own family members with great gifts, luxurious living. And so, if we can understand that connection there, that even the worst of mankind can still take care of their own, the point that Jesus is making here, the contrast that he's drawing, is that when you look there at God, God in heaven above, who is infinitely good and infinitely pure and righteous, does he want to take care of his children? You best believe it. And so he wants his children to come to him. But he wants us coming to him asking for the right things. Now he points out here that if your boy comes to you hungry, growling stomach there, and he wants some bread, are you actually going to turn around and provide him with a stone, a rock that could bust up his teeth? It has no nutrients whatsoever. You're not going to do that. If he asks for a fish, are you going to give him a slithering snake that could do him some harm? No, you're not going to do that. And if you look there at the parallel account in Luke's gospel, Luke chapter 11, there in verse 12, you find out that also, if he would come asking for an egg, are you going to give him a scorpion? In other words, a creeping thing with a sting. You would never think to do that. No. You are eager to help your children, not hurt them or harm them. And so too, when you look here at God, who is infinitely good, he wants to bless us. Bless us beyond our expectations in a spiritual way. You see, as you analyze this here, it's not so much that Jesus is really getting at bread that you'd find there at a bakery or fish that you'd pick up there at the frozen food section at the grocery store. It's not talking so much here about an egg that you'd have for breakfast. We all understand that God is going to take care of our daily needs that way, our daily bread that way. But Jesus is ultimately driving at this. There are greater gifts than even these. They are spiritual. And the Father wants so desperately to impart them to us. And so if you lack wisdom, go to God about that. He will help you. If you lack moral courage and moral strength, you go to God about that. He will help you. If you need inner peace in your life, he can grant you that. Go to him about that. Now, let me tell you something here. We're going to give gifts to our children. If anybody doubts that, you just wait for December to come around, and those malls will turn into a madhouse, and shopping carts will just be hurling down the aisles of those stores. Oh, we know how to give gifts to our children. But the question here for you parents would be this. Are you giving your children the gifts that really count? The greater gifts? We're going to be looking at that here today. Now, some have said that the hardest thing about having children is that they do not come with a manual. But now, if you reflect on that further, I don't know that that's altogether correct. We do have a manual. Yes, we do. What's it known as? It's known as the Holy Bible. This holy book shall guide our youth and well support our age. Yes, this is the book. Psalm 119, 105. Your word is a lamp to my feet and light to my path. Psalm 119, 133. Direct my steps by your word. You see, we can be directed by God's word. This is the manual that we have to pay attention to. In Ephesians chapter 6, there, verse 4. Paul says it like this: "And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up." How? "Bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." As your little ones come here into this world, you're going to be as the first authority figure that they see. What kind of example are you setting, fathers? Are you teaching your children to love God? Are you telling them that this is what this is all about, serving God here in life so that we can have heaven in the afterwhile? If not, we are failing. I think there about the instruction that was found in Deuteronomy chapter 6. Deuteronomy chapter 6, there, verse 4. "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words which I command you today shall be where? Shall be in your heart." You internalize the word of God. "You shall teach them how? You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up." And he goes on from here to talk about how you need to be completely immersed in the word. Let everyone there in your household and even in the community see that this is what you're truly about. Do they witness that? I once heard about a grandpa that had passed away, and two of the grandkids were there at the funeral. They were sitting there by each other, and one leaned to the other and said, "Do you think that grandpa made it to heaven?" And the other heard that question. Why would you even think to ask that? We love grandpa. He said, "You know, I don't really think that he made it. You know, you see, when it came to harvesting the crops, he would always talk long in advance about that. He'd make the preparations and then he'd get out there to harvest the crops. When it came to hunting trips, he would plan a hunt and hunt that plan. And he'd go out there and he'd be successful because he was talking a lot about that too. But you know what? I never once heard Grandpa talk about going to heaven. Heaven is a prepared place for a prepared people." Now, when it says over here, "Do not provoke your children to wrath," what does this say? Now, does this mean that every time that your children get upset that it's your fault? No. But can it be a little like this? "Do as I say, not as I do." You know, "Son, I don't want you to be smoking, but I'm going to go ahead and light up over here. You stay away from that snuff, but I'm going to take some chew. Don't you be cursing now, but you pardon my French. Son, you get up and you go to church services with Mom, but I'm going to stay home and watch the ball game." You talk about a recipe for disaster. You've got it right there. Let's seek to live godly. Let's understand that we are spiritual leaders to our youngsters. Now, talking here about mothers now. Titus 2, 3 and 4. "The older women likewise, that they admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed or evil spoken of." Now you look at that there. That's a lot. That's a tall order. but to love their husbands. Is there a war zone there in the house? Are y'all constantly fighting and feuding and at each other's throats? That's not what kids need to see. And we look at this here, perhaps maybe we even scratch our heads, that here women are being taught now to love their children. I thought all that was supposed to come naturally. But you know what? Sometimes mothers can come to resent their little ones. Oh, I'd love to go out there to that party, but you know, I got to stay back home here and take care of them. Oh, it's such a chore and burden. You're looking at that the wrong way. What a privilege it is to raise up these kids for God. Let me tell you something right now. If you want your children to turn out well, spend half as much money on them and twice as much time with them. When all is said and done, those youngsters are going to want your presence, not your presence. You get the idea there? ENC as opposed to ENTS. Are you there and involved in their lives? Well, we give our children stones and serpents when they ask for our time and affection, but rather we give them just material things. Go in your Bibles over to Proverbs chapter 4. In Proverbs 4 here, we find that the wise man is talking in a very straightforward manner to his own offspring here. And he wants his son here, he wants his boy to turn out very well. Now he speaks here very generally there in Proverbs chapter 4, verse 1. Here first to the children, children plural. Hear, my children, the instruction of a father, and give attention to no understanding, for I give you good doctrine. Do not forsake my law. When I was my father's son, tender and the only one in the sight of my mother, he also taught me and said to me, let your heart retain my words, keep my commands and live. Get wisdom, get understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will preserve you. Love her, and she will keep you. Wisdom is the principal thing. Now, he looks at all of this here, and he points out that in a way, parenting is much like passing a torch. Even as his own father, David, had been there for him. And you look at the record, admittedly, David was not always candidate for father of the year, right? But at least he did show some good measure of attention to Solomon. And so Solomon says, look, I'm going to pass the torch along here. And here's what you need to be preoccupied with. Wisdom. And he goes on to give some applications there. In verse 14, do not enter the path of the wicked and do not walk in the way of evil. Avoid it. Do not travel on it. Turn away from it and pass on. For they do not sleep unless they have done evil. And their sleep is taken away unless they make someone fall. For they eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. In other words, birds of a feather do what? They flock together. And make no mistake, you are going to be known by those that you run with. Evil companions do what? Corrupt good morals, good habits. So you see here how Solomon is teaching his children. But he doesn't stop there. In chapter 5, verse 1, my son, pay attention to my wisdom. Lend your ear to my understanding that you may preserve discretion and your lips may keep knowledge. For the lips of an immoral woman drip honey, and her mouth is smoother than oil. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Don't be going near that person there. Watch for your own purity. Watch for your own integrity. Pursue the path that God is laying out, not the world. There in the sixth chapter, chapter 6, verse 6, go to the ant, you sluggard, consider her ways and be wise. In other words, be industrious. Be busy with your time here, because an idle mind is going to become what? The devil's workshop. And on you can go here with practical examples and application. But whether you're talking about, say, chapter 5, verse 1, or chapter 6, verse 1, or even chapter 7, verse 1, what do you have here? Over and over again, my son, my son, my son. He cares about his own here. Enough to teach him sensible things. Are you there for your children that way? We need to be. We need to be. Well, not only that. We give our children stones and serpents when they ask for our guidance and discipline, but rather we decide to look the other way. The Duke of Windsor, when he was returning back to the UK from a trip here in America, he made the remark that what impressed him the most about America is the way that the parents obey their children. That was not a good commentary. That was back in 57. I doubt much has changed. We're looking at all of this today in our society. You know, you go back there to Proverbs 29. Proverbs 29 there in verse 15. It's not an easy task. We approach this with the utmost of seriousness. Because this is pretty heavy. The rod and rebuke give what? Wisdom. All right? Sometimes you have to apply the board of education on the seat of learning. There is wisdom right there in the belt. But a child left to himself does what? Brings shame to his mother. Also there in verse 17, correct your son and he will give you rest. Yes, he will give delight to your soul. So many problems today with alienation that's taking place. Great disorientation and confusion with the kids. It traces its roots back to where? Back to poor parenting. A less than desirable environment in the home. You have situations where children are coming home, they don't find the parents. Parents come home, they don't find the children. Where are we? Let's be there for each other. You know, you look there at Eli. Eli in 1 Samuel chapter 3. Oh, he might have been thinking that he cared about his boys, but he did not really care for them enough to correct them. Well, what was the end result? It wasn't good. That would spell disaster for Eli's house as a whole. And God would basically cut off that house. You have this here in 1 Samuel chapter 3. As Samuel, at a younger age now, hears about what God is going to do, he learns that God is well displeased, well upset here with Eli. The Lord said to Samuel, "Behold, I will do something in Israel at which both ears of everyone who hears it will tingle." It'll get their attention. "In that day I will perform against Eli all that I have spoken concerning his house from beginning to end. For I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knows." Why? "Because his sons made themselves vile and he did not restrain them." Now you go back there to the second chapter and you learn the details of that. Here you had his sons who were supposed to be as men of God. They were officiating there at the tabernacle. It tells you that there in chapter 2, verse 22. But what were they doing? As people would come there, they were there at the entrance and they were using that as an opportunity to seduce women. Now when people heard about all that, when they learned of what was going on, they didn't want to show up at tabernacle services. So you see here, Eli does speak up. "Why do you do such things? For I hear of your evil dealings from all the people. No, my sons, it is not a good report that I hear. You make the Lord's people transgress." With you living hypocritical lives like that, people aren't going to want to show up there. They can't think on spiritual things. So you become as a stumbling block to even them. And there, verse 29. Hard saying. "Why do you kick at my sacrifice and my offering, which I have commanded in my dwelling place, and honor your sons more than me?" That was the problem there. He had not been teaching his children properly to love God. The old saying is that a bad apple can do what? Ruin the bushel? Ruin the batch? In the case of Eli, he had two bad apples. But he could have done something about it. Being in a position of authority, he could have removed them from serving in this capacity, but he does not do that. And as a result, to use the expression, he lets them, quote, get away with murder. How do we do when it comes to parenting? Do children know that there are limits, that there are boundaries? Some parents are very, quote, gun-shy in this area. I'm just so afraid that if I do this, I'll warp my child. Let me tell you, my rear end got warped a tad. It sure did. And look, were there some spankings that I got which I felt were not entirely fair? Yes, I can say that because my mother's not here right now. But let me tell you something right now. Even though that would happen from time to time, at least I could be appreciative that she was caring enough to correct. And so you young people, look at it in that light. Foolishness can be bound up there in the heart of a child, but the rod will remove that far from him. Let's trust in the wisdom of God. Also, we give our children stones and serpents when they ask for our stand on morality, but rather we give them access, unlimited access at times, to immoral entertainment. Ephesians chapter 5. Paul is calling us to a high standard here. He's calling us beyond the world here. Let's set our minds on the things of Christ. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 3. But fornication, that's sexual immorality, and all uncleanness or covetousness, let it not even be named among you as is fitting for saints. Neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor coarse jesting. What is that? The off-color humor, such as will come on there frequently with late night viewing and television. Some of those shows, Jay Leno, David Letterman, Jimmy Kimmel Live, Conan O'Brien. I don't mean to be stepping on toes there. I'm not suggesting that all of their jokes are necessarily bad jokes. Some can actually be in good taste, but if we watch that long enough, we know deep down how it often gravitates toward crude humor. We don't need to be listening to all of that. He says here, these things are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks. For this you know, that no fornicator, unclean person, nor covetous man who is an idolater has any inheritance in the kingdom of Christ and God. Let no one deceive you with empty words. You see, there'll be those that will try to suggest, oh, this is not so bad. This is pretty minor. This is kind of trivial. Don't be such a hardliner. Let no one deceive you with empty words. For because of these things, the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. Therefore, do not be partakers or sharers with them. They are of the world, but don't adopt that philosophy that, oh, well, hey, everyone is doing this, so I can do it too. If anything, that might be an argument not to do it. Do not be partakers with them. You look here at how so much has changed in our society. It was back there in 1939, where you had the well-known picture that about every woman here would know, Gone with the Wind, that came out. And that's a long movie, especially for a guy to watch. But it caused a bit of a scandal in its time. Were you aware of that? Because for the very first time, there with the entertainment industry, you had the D word that was used in that film. But now, you think about where matters are at today. Will an eye even blink when that word is uttered? Not hardly. And let me tell you, it just seems like there are no words any longer that are on that X list that cannot find their ways onto the airwaves coming through the television set. I once heard it pointed out that if our grandfather or great-grandfather, depending on where you're at in life, had just heard some of the things coming through the television programs today, he would have taken that TV set and chucked it out the window. But you know, we hardly budge. Sometimes we don't even bother to change the channel. What's happened? I have the answer right here. In fact, Paul shares the answer. In Ephesians chapter 4 there, he points out Verse 17, "This I say therefore and testify in the Lord, that you should no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk, in the futility of their mind, having their understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the blindness of their heart." Who, verse 19, watch this. "Who being past feeling," underline that part, "being past feeling, have given themselves over to lewdness, to work all uncleanness with greediness." What does it mean to be past feeling? In other words, what used to bother you no longer causes any irritation whatsoever. You see, even there with the world, gradually things got worse and worse and worse, so that they have no real moral bearing any longer. But it should not be so among us. He says there, verse 20, "You have not so learned Christ." Christ took a solid stand for morality and godly living, and so too should Christ's people, His disciples. We give our children stones and serpents, and they're asking for a solid stand on morality, but rather we cave in. How about this? They ask for a spiritual focus, and we encourage instead only worldly success. 1 John 2, verse 15. This is great perhaps for a memory verse right here, this part, this passage here. 1 John chapter 2, verse 15. "Love not the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world." And the world is what? What's happening with the world? The world is passing away and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever. What kind of priorities do you have at heart? What do your children see? What are you emphasizing? You see these bumper stickers. "Proud parent of an honor student." And I don't mean to knock at that. It is great if your son or daughter can do exceptionally well academically. Absolutely, we got to get behind that. They need to have a measure of self-esteem and a good work ethic. I get all of that. But let me tell you right now, if all that they are hearing about is doing well in the kingdoms of this earth and not doing well in the kingdom of heaven, we are failing as parents. We sure are. Can your youngsters tell the difference between Noah's Ark and the Ark of the Covenant? Do they know if the story of Noah is found in the Old Testament or the New Testament? But you know, you let the same child bring home a D on the report card there for math class, and oh, we're all frantic. Got to make this one here now stay late after school. Get that one a tutor here. We got to get that one here up to par, up to speed. All right, I get that. But let me tell you, the world is passing away and the lust of it. Sure, you can learn how to do calculus even. But how is that going to help you come eternity? I like how I heard one gospel preacher put this. And his Bible was very well marked up from cover to cover. Many times he read those books, the 66 books of the Bible. But he'd often point out, he said, "What I'm doing here is I'm cramming for my finals." He understood what was truly important, see. We give our children stones and serpents when they're asking for a spiritual focus. We steer them right the opposite way. And in the last place, we give our children stones and serpents when they ask for order and stability, but rather we show them just chaos and unpredictability. It's important, husbands and wives, how you conduct yourselves there around each other. When love is in the home, there's happiness. Contentment reigns. When love is in the home, there's peace. Is that there for your home? Ephesians chapter 5, verse 22, "Wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord, for the husband is head of the wife, as also Christ is head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, just as the church is subject to Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for her." That sacrificial love, that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word. Are we putting all of this into practice? Are we? As I reflect there on my own home life, it was not the most ideal. And my own father, regrettably, could have quite the temper tantrums at times. And my older brother, he was younger at the time, but a little one, and he made the comment there to Mom one time when he was in trouble and he was going to get a spanking. You know what he said? Well, how about Daddy? How about Daddy? And my mother nearly broke down in tears. You see, we have to put forth the right example. Lead by example. Show stability in the household. Show love and compassion and affection. I think about that song that's well known, The Cat's in the Cradle. My child arrived just the other day. He came to the world in the usual way. But there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away. And he was talking before I knew it, and as he grew, he said, I'm going to be like you, Dad. You know I'm going to be like you. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon. When you coming home, Dad? I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then. My son turned 10 just the other day. He said, thanks for the ball, Dad. Come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw? I said, not today. I got a lot to do. He said, that's okay. And he walked away, but his smile never dimmed, and said, I'm going to be like him. Yeah. You know I'm going to be like him. And you know where this goes. How eventually the tables are turned. And Dad wants to have time there with his son, but the son is not available. I've long since retired. My son's moved away. I called him up just the other day. I said, I'd like to see you if you don't mind. He said, I'd love to, Dad, if I could find the time. You see, my new job's a hassle, and the kids have the flu. But it's sure nice talking to you, Dad. It's been sure nice talking to you. And as I hung up the phone, it occurred to me. He'd grown up just like me. My boy was just like me. Fathers, where is your heart? Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Do you put God first? Do your kids see that? Or if we're failing there, and I'm talking now even about parents, mothers as well, if they don't see that we love God above all else, as they grow to become men and women, are they going to love God above all else? If it happens where they become Christians, might it end up being in spite of the actions and choices that we have made? No. Let it be because we have helped to pave the way and shown them what a Christian ought to be. You think there about God. He's given good gifts. He gave the very best of heaven, his precious son, Jesus Christ. You can't top that. That's humbling. Let's give back to him. Let's surrender our soul to him. And children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. In other words, they are on loan. They do not truly belong to us, but they're given to us by God. But we're going to have to give them back. Let's do that. As good stewards, as custodians, let's make good with that investment. If you're not yet a Christian, become one today. He who believes and is baptized shall be saved. Resolve to live for God, pursue him day by day, and teach your family in that right way so that we can all get to heaven together. If we can help toward this end, your responding to the invitation would be very ideal. Please come to the front while together we stand now and sing.